If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
In this awesome episode of Mind
Stellar Pump. Episode.
So for the first 35 minutes, we do our fun time introductory conversation. We start out by talking about the study that was shared to us by Juve showing that light therapy actually improves cognitive performance. That's crazy.
Wow, that's awesome.
Now, Juve Red Light Company is one of our partners. If you go to juve.com, that's JOOVV.com/mindpump, and you buy something that's $500 or more, you'll get free shipping and a free MAPS Prime program. And by the way, they have the new rechargeable small travel red light box. We love that thing.
It's my little red buddy.
Then we talked about Blackstone Labs getting busted for selling like steroids and shit in their supplements. You fuckers. No wonder people thought your supplements worked real well.
Assholes.
Yeah, crazy. Then we talked about the steroid bans in China. Adam brought up Brute Strength on YouTube. It's this great channel that shows these strength competitions. I talked about using macadamia nut milk and gold juice from Organifi. It's delicious and makes me sleep like a baby. Now, Organifi is a producer of organic supplements, including protein powders, green powders, and the gold juice that I just talked about. If you go to Organifi, Organifi.com/mindpump, and use the code mindpump, you'll get a fat 20% off.
Step up that froth game.
Then we talked about the college cheating scandal, you celebrity fuckers. And then we talked about the egg study that tries to tell us that eating whole eggs is bad for us. Bad study. Not a good one.
Hilarious.
Then we got into the fitness part of this episode. The first question was talking about strength versus hypertrophy. Hypertrophy meaning muscle growth. Like, what are the different types of training that contribute to each of those? What are the benefits? What are the drawbacks of each? How do they talk to each other? Great talk in that part of the episode.
Why is one harder to say?
Next question. Why does this person suffer from low back pain when they're playing sports like basketball and flag football? Of course, there's individual variances, but we've trained enough people to where we can give a pretty good general answer as to why this person may be feeling low back pain. The next question. How do you overcome negative body image while bulking? Bulking is when you eat more food to gain more muscle. Sometimes a little bit of body fat makes it difficult for some people, especially people who just don't want to gain any weight. We give you some tips on how to get around that.
Embrace the thickness, Sal.
And the final question, what are the pitfalls of a reverse diet? So reverse dieting is when you start to slowly increase your calories to gain muscle or speed up your metabolism along with strength training. What are the pitfalls and how can you get around them? Also, this month, MAPS Aesthetic. This is the bodybuilding, physique competitor, bikini competitor sculpting program that we've designed. That program's 50% off. Half off. Here's what you do. Go to mapsfitnessproducts.com. Use the code BLACK50, BLACK50. Now, this program has a component where you can literally pick the body parts you want to place special focus on. That's why it's MAPS Aesthetic. You look in the mirror, you decide, I want more shoulder, I want more hamstring, I want more glute, I want more pec,
I need more lats. Glutes.
Whatever. You design your program yourself within this program, and of course it's expertly written by yourself truly, Justin and Adam. It's half off. Go get it. MAPSFitnessProducts.com. BLACK50 is the code. Also, we have other MAPS programs on there for different people's goals and different sets of experiences from beginner to advanced. Make sure you go check them out.
I was so exhausted yesterday because I was up early in the morning. I saw one of my clients I hadn't seen in a long time. So I was up at 5, train. Then I had Mike Matthews that he interviewed me.
How long was that?
It was like 2 hours. The actual interview was only like an hour and a half, I would say. But as soon as we got on, we were bullshitting for a good half hour, 45 minutes. And yeah. I think he's going to actually play a lot of that stuff. So.
Yeah, that's the good stuff.
Yeah, no, I think the audience will enjoy that. We were talking a lot of. I was actually asking him a lot of questions about business and SEO and pillar pages.
Love Mike.
Right, so we talked. I did that for like 2 hours. Then Max came in, and we did back-to-back podcasts, which was probably about 3.5 hours, maybe 4 hours straight, and then we went and talked afterwards and had lunch. Anytime I talk that much consistently, I'm just, I feel like I had the longest, hardest workout. It's
the brain just wants to kind of shut down.
Isn't it crazy?
Yeah, it's weird.
And you know what it is? Your brain is sucking up energy like crazy because of all the thinking and being on. You have to be on the whole time.
Yeah.
Know?
So I've been back to using the Juve light consistently again. And I have it set up in my spare room and I have the big panel, right? And so it's cool because it lights up like the whole room and the bed is really close to where the panel's at. And so I came in, I took a drink, I'm so exhausted. I'm like, I want to go sit in front of the Juve for a little bit. I'm trying to be consistent with that. And so I go upstairs, I strip down naked. I lay down in front of it with the crown. Of course, the most priority for me is my hair, right? So the crown of my head, I lay with it close. And she comes in and like wakes me up. I'm like in the fetal position, thumb in my mouth type of deal in front of the light. I guess I passed out for like an hour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. With the,
Are you going back to using it consistently for your hair?
I am. And my psoriasis. I mean, those two things. I noticed my skin, and I actually noticed my skin even more than my hair. I'm on a mission this time because I haven't put as much emphasis on the crown of my head, and I'm assuming that's a better way to do it. I'm not sure if
direct.
Direct.
Yeah, no. So, and it that's the one red light therapy is FDA approved for hair restoration or whatever they want to call it. So it's actually proved to from the FDA to actually help regrow hair.
Yeah, and I don't want it reminds me like many things that I've done before where
you got to keep using it though.
Yes, you have to keep using it because I being completely transparent, I've been inconsistent. There's, I'll do it for a while and I know that my skin looks way better. My psoriasis is suppressed and my hair feels thicker. Mm. I don't go from being like the guy who's going bald to like all of a sudden having a full head of hair, but it is noticeably thicker.
I'm also a member.
Yeah, right.
You know what? So it boosts ATP production through enhanced mitochondrial activity. So ATP is the main source of energy for cells of the body. And so when you use red light, it tells the mitochondria to produce more ATP. And so it's just making the cells of your scalp produce more hair. And so when you take it off and you stop using it, it goes back to, what it was before. But trip off this. This was sent to Rachel by Juve. And I thought this was fascinating. Here's the title of it. First Human Trials Show Major Cognitive Improvements for Memory, Attention, and Reaction Time.
Wow.
So this is light therapy to, let me read what it says. In 2013, team of researchers conducted the first placebo-controlled study demonstrating cognitive performance benefits in human subjects who received light therapy treatments directed at the head.
Cognitive benefits.
Yes.
What a trip.
Yeah, they found significant improvement in the treatment in treated versus placebo control groups for reaction times, for memory, and more positive moods. Crazy.
That is really interesting. The way that since we have those little minis, the goes.
Yeah.
I've had it set up on my desk, and I take some time out when I get home from work to just kind of have like my own time where I'm like playing on my guitar and kind of it helps me just wind down and get into like a more calm state. And I just figure I start would just turn that on. And it's mainly shining on my face more than anything, but
which needs the most help.
I don't know what it's doing, but yeah, it does. Right, I was trying to help the improvement of the aesthetic.
It's not a miracle worker. Relax.
Hey, fuck you, man. It's working. It's doing something. I get a lot of compliments.
We send Juve like a before and after. It's like Justin's face.
Can you
and then
imagine
my face? The second face.
Oh my god! Yeah. Amazing.
I know. I got these big old fat like chipmunk cheeks.
Juve goes are off, flying off the shelf. Yeah. We're sold out.
It'd be amazing.
That's hilarious.
But, yeah.
No, but I mean, it's...
But if it's giving me cognitive benefits, like, yes.
Well, in New Zealand, I think it was New Zealand, I got this article that showed that they were people with dementia, older people with dementia, they were putting these like... You know when you go... you ever seen movies of when women go to like the salon and they put that big... It's like a big cone over their head
yeah.
and it dries their hair. What is that? Is it a big hair dryer?
Yeah, it's a big hair dryer.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's just a hair dryer.
It looks like that. And they're putting it over
it's
their
like
head.
Mork and Mindy
device. And you're seeing all the red light coming through. And in this article, they're saying that they're using it to help with dementia. And they're finding that people who are using it are sharper. This sounds
it's futuristic.
As the words are coming out of my mouth, I'm thinking, you sound like an idiot. That sounds like the most woo-woo bullshit in the world. But I'm reading these studies, and it's fascinating.
To me, it doesn't. When you think about what they're trying to do with red light is you're trying to emulate the things that are positive that we get from the sun. And I think if someone were to tell you like if how all the positive benefits of being out in the sun,
sure.
I think we've heard that enough times that makes sense. So it makes sense to me that we're starting to connect some of these benefits from this red light therapy to all these things that I think you would also assume that the sun has that positively affect. So
I guess, man, I just find it so fascinating because I remember when they first came to us, I was like, all right, let's see what you got to
we
say.
All were.
Yeah, it and sounded like magic.
And then the guy's like, here's some studies you can look at. And I'm like, are these real? And I go online. I'm like, these are real studies.
I knew Ben Greenfield was like pressing it hard. And I'm like, I don't know, man. It's kind of strange.
But Ben goes all over the place.
Well,
right?
I know. But then you find gems in that, you know? And so this is one of those things.
I still think that there is a hierarchy of things that are important that we talk about with nutrition and exercise, but it's a big deal because I've said this on this show many times that I know that I do not get the sun nowhere near, not even a 10% of what I used to as a kid.
Yeah, you can tell by my tan.
Right. And I just,
I wear sunglasses when I look
how I try and be aware of it now is like if we get stuck in this dungeon, like yesterday where, you know, I've spent, and that's how I use it right now. My goal is to minimum use it three times a week.
Don't you feel like it affects your mood?
Totally.
You know, being indoors all the time.
I do. I really do. And I feel better when I do it. So
I use it in the sauna because I figure I kill two birds with one stone or feed two birds with one scone.
Yeah,
I got to make sure I say the vegan.
Watch your language.
Yeah. No, I do in the sauna. So because you guys know I have a sauna at home now, which another thing that I noticed a huge improvement or benefit from is doing sauna post workout. But anyway, I sit in the sauna. And then I shine the light directly on my genitals because it's supposed to raise testosterone. So
like you need any more.
You can imagine exactly. You can imagine the sight that my poor girlfriend runs into every once in a while when she walks in the room, and I'm in the sauna, and she's like, "What are you doing?" She turns around the corner, and I'm sitting on I'm in the sauna.
Satan dick, right there.
Satan dick. Yes.
Bro. You're going to start a new Juve hashtag. Juve is going to hate us for this commercial.
Yeah. They're new Satan dick
people
program.
Are buying Juve Goes, hoping they're going to transform their face and have a Satan dick.
Yeah, dude. So here's a funny story. So she went out. She was off at the store. It was a week we don't have the kids, so it was just her and I. She was out. This is when I first had the Juve Go. And I knew, you know, I had read that, you know, using red light has shown to improve testosterone levels. But in particular, if you shine it at the testosterone-producing testicles, right? So I'm like, oh, cool. I just got it. I charged it. I'm like, let me try this out. So I'm sitting on the couch, have my pants down by my ankles, okay, in front of the TV. I'm watching TV, have my legs open, and I propped up the Juve Go in like where my pants were because my pants were down by my legs.
Yeah.
Nice. So it's just kind of propped up. And I'm sitting there with my t-shirt on and everything. And it's a bright red.
Not awkward
like
at all.
It glows everywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So she walks in and she's like, what the fuck?
Like, what is happening?
Yeah. Like, it's not that out of the ordinary to see me do some weird shit, you know, waiting for her coming home. Like, hey, what are we doing next? But that was a little too far. She walked out the opposite direction.
I want you to, you brought something up yesterday that we didn't get a chance to get into that I don't know anything about, the Blackstone Labs.
Oh, shit. Did you hear about this?
No, I wanted to hear it from you.
Okay, so.
More shenanigans. Huh?
Bro, they're getting indicted.
That's a big company.
Yes, they're getting indicted for their roles in a scheme to distribute illegal dietary supplements. So what they found was that the pills were contained things that were illegal, like anabolic steroids or unapproved drugs. Weird. And they were selling a shit ton of them, So these fuckers might get a lot of jail time.
Well, let me ask you a question then in terms of like people like, you know, John Jones getting popped for certain things because he's claiming they were in his supplements. And do you really think there might be validity in some of these athletes getting, you know, popped for all this
shit? Here's the deal. Yes, but also if you're that level of an athlete,
you know.
You're an idiot if you're buying
that. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just putting that out there like if they're getting indicted, you know, obviously that they're mixing all this, you know, anabolic steroids could potentially be in there.
Mark my words, you're going to see a whole flood of athletes who are like,
it's going to be the new crutch.
I was taking Blackstone.
That's why I've got
popped. No, because what happened, so the charges are that they're selling these illegal supplements. By the way, the punishment for this, the max is 5 years in prison and a fine of $250,000 or twice the gross gain or loss from the offense. So if they get the max, now here's the problem. The FDA has been playing this game with supplement companies now for a little while. And the supplement companies have been pushing back and saying, no, we don't want to get regulated like pharmaceuticals. And it's back and forth, back and forth. And the FDA, all they need is an example. Like there's how many supplement companies out there? Thousands?
Yeah.
So all they need is one example. And what they'll typically do is they'll punish the fuck out of them to show everybody we mean business.
They're the example.
And what better example than the, have you seen the owners of Blackstone?
I have. They're the ones that flaunt the Lamborghinis and the mansion. And
they're fucking jacked and roided out.
I'm trying to think. They're connected to somebody who we know really well. And I don't remember. I want to say they're connected to Craig. I think Craig knows them really well. Now I want to call Craig up and ask him if he knows anything about it.
Well, check this out. The indictment also charges that there are two counts of introducing a product. I don't even know what this is. Known as Super DMZ RX 2.0, which is an unapproved new drug. I have no idea what this is. I don't know if that's a steroid or something else that they were selling.
Some crazy robot.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. There's also people who are saying that they received kidney failure, liver damage, and some other health problems. So I guess some people, you know, are taking this. And I can kind of, you know, I kind of feel bad. Like, imagine if you're the 16-year-old kid. And you buy this supplement.
Okay, I felt bad for that. I was like, who do you feel bad
for? Well, like, this would have been me. If I was a 16-year-old kid and I heard about the supplements that really work, I would have bought them. I would have taken them. And if they do contain a steroid, of course they work. And I would have been like, fuck, going off for 30, you know, after 30 days, I'm going to stay on this. Not knowing that you're taking
That happened to me. That happened to me. That my first experience of gyno came from an over-the-counter supplement.
Is that when you first got it?
Yes.
What was it that you took?
I had taken a real cycle years before that, and then I had taken the. It was Trin. It was this the Trin bottle. I forget the name of the brand.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it later on got removed.
It was like EpiTrin or some shit.
Yeah, and I didn't take any post cycle anything, and I saw such great gains from it that I ran back like two or three bottles in a row.
Oh fuck!
And when by the third bottle, all of a sudden I had never felt this before that. And like I said, I'd ran steroids a couple of years before that and I didn't have any side effects like this. And all of a sudden the gyno comes out of nowhere and I had no idea. And it was like, and then I find out later on this thing gets pulled off and I'm like, no wonder.
Here's what pisses me off about this so bad is that you have a few assholes who ruin it for everybody because here's what you don't want. You do not want FDA strictly regulated supplements because then your creatine is going to cost you three times as much. Your vitamin C will be the only thing that's available. Maybe protein powders. You're not going to see all these other introductions of supplements.
Maybe that's what we need. Maybe that's what we need though for people to stop thinking it's such a fucking miracle thing.
It'll never make it better. No way. Yeah. And the FDA is not perfect either, man. Like how many drugs and shit get pulled off the market and it'll kill the whole market. And let's be honest, as much as we rail on the supplement industry, it does fuel and fund a lot of also smart fitness people and information. And you cut that out and you're going to eliminate a lot of the money.
That's fair.
You know?
I wonder if where are they at? How far along is this? Did it just...
Oh, they were on trial already. I think they're indicted.
It seems like they've been cracking down a lot like lately. Like more of these companies are popping up and the FDA is kind of getting more of their hands involved to set examples.
It seems like in particular, steroids in particular is getting targeted a little bit. And wasn't it you, Adam, that was telling me that China is coming on board with this?
Yeah, so this is crazy too. So China, and I want to bring this up so I actually read it correctly, but China is going to make it a criminal offense to use steroids. And their idea right now is to be cracking down on it really hard because I think it's 2022 or 20.
Oh, the Olympics?
Is that when it, do you know when it is, Sal?
I think it's either 2022 or 2023.
Yeah.
They're trying to get clean everything up.
They're trying to clean everything up. Now, the thing that I think is crazy about that is that, I don't know if people know this or not, but over 99%, so basically everything, all steroids today, which let me back up a little bit. Very few people that are taking steroids today in your local gyms or buddy that's handing to you is not like the back in the days where it was shipped overseas and
pharmaceutical.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Steroids.
It's become, you can get online, you can Google how to do your own thing now. It's somebody who's locally making it. They get the raw form, the powder form of that shipped from China. So almost every steroid that is being used in the United States, the original powder form of that is derived from China. Mm. And so China is going to be cracking down really hard. So it's 2022. So China's criminalizing doping as a public relations move in advance of 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics.
So you think this is going to really affect the flow of the source of the black market?
Oh, 100%. I mean, if you were buying, you know, your typical steroid bottle for 72, and I remember when I was the first time that I had bought steroids, it was like $250 a bottle. So I project it to be back up to those crazy numbers or higher.
Yeah, because at first,
was it Mexico before that was the main producer?
Yeah, because at first what it was pharmaceutical. Actual American pharmaceutical, anabolics. Then it was shipped in from other countries, and then that got cracked down. And then it was veterinary grade from Mexico, and then it was black market underground Mexican. But then there was so much counterfeit and shit there.
Yeah.
And then it was like Adam's saying, people are buying the raw materials from China, mm-hmm. making it themselves, and so you have all these underground labs in the U.S. that are making their anabolics from these powders that are coming from China. But if they really try to clamp down on that.
Oh, they're saying that China promises to throw steroid users in prison in 2019.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
so
aggressive.
They are trying to make a point from all this.
What a stupid policy.
It's going
to
be.
I think it's so dumb. You're going to take someone who's doing something to their own body and you're going to throw them in a cage. It makes no damn. I mean, if you're going to take steroids and then hurt someone or do something, you know, I get that, but. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me, but whatever. It's all political.
Well,
right?
And I think in the last few years, they've had a lot of athletes that have been popped and busted over there. So I mm-hmm. think that's the driving force behind this, right?
Dude, communist countries are well known for being ahead of the curve in terms of doping and steroids for their athletes.
Yeah.
It's state sponsored. Remember?
Right.
The way that they view their athletes, because their athletes are supported by their government. So their government goes, picks people out many times as children, and then that's what they do their whole life. They take them from their family. The family gets all this, you know, national praise or whatever. They may pay the family a stipend because they took their daughter or their son. And the kid is, they're owned by the state. And so the state feeds them, gives them their whatever drugs, their training. And that's it. And so it's a source of national pride, literally. And so some of the worst, cases of this of abuse come from these countries. I mean, you look back to the Soviet Union and you know what they did with weightlifting and you know the first time we ever really saw that was the East German female swim team. Hmm. Well, they all came out and they all had like broad shoulders and you know. Just they look like a bunch of dudes
big
walking
legs,
out,
legs, yeah,
and they were crushing everybody, and everybody's like, "Huh, this is weird."
Yeah,
something does add up.
Yeah,
here.
what the hell?
I mean, you know, I'm still torn on what I feel is right or what we should do. Like, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. You know, do you make like two separate leagues where
I think so.
In every sport there's a tested, just like there is in bodybuilding, right? You can do a non. But the thing is that I think that way too, Sal, but. That I don't know if anybody watches that.
Dude.
Like, no one's going to watch the...
Yeah, the steroid one's always going to win.
That's
right.
Okay.
Because, which is going to be what the market determines, right?
That's okay. That's on us. Like, if we want it to go... Here's the bottom line. We want that shit to go away, stop watching it.
Yeah.
But you're not. You want to watch it, so it's going to exist. I think if you want to let people compete at the highest level, forget about the fact that it's healthy, because it's not. I don't care what you do.
Right.
There's nothing mm-hmm. healthy about it.
Right.
Let people compete at the highest level. And let them use whatever they want. I mean, they're doing it with swimsuits. They're doing it with shoes when they run. They're changing the track. They're changing the way the water in the pool is so that people can swim faster. They're doing it with nutrition. They're doing it with supplements and vitamins. Let them inject hormones and see whatever. And then if you want, see if the market creates a demand for a league that is all natural.
Like a purist league.
Yeah, and then let that happen. But at the end of the day, we are watching people that don't represent 99.9999% of us anyway. So we need to stop pretending. And I think we need to be honest about it, because I think the argument used to be, we want them to be good role models for our children. So we don't want them.
That's
athletes are not good role models anyway.
I know.
You know?
Yeah, look, that's what's always funny is like, you know, all the stuff like – I mean, you get to that highest level and then you look at their life and like what they're doing and getting in trouble and incarcerated and all. It's like, why are we even lifting them up in that category? Just acknowledge how great they are at that one thing.
Dude,
and then leave it at that.
Look at all the performance enhancing drugs that we use for business. Everything from caffeine, which everybody uses, that's a performance enhancing drug, to stronger drugs like Adderall and Ritalin. And now you have people using, you know, small doses of psychedelics, microdosing to improve their performance. What's that other one that one that Dave Asprey tells everybody to use?
Modafinil.
Modafinil. Oh, it's a nutrient. Yeah, and it's like, I mean, you know, this is what we do. It's funny. I was talking about this to Jessica, and we were laughing because it's like, you know, people. They drink alcohol, they'll drink coffee, they'll, you know, maybe smoke a cigarette or whatever, things that are more acceptable. And it's just this is a part of human life. This is what we do. We medicate ourselves, you know. So, and then food. Food is the greatest, most abused drugs in modern societies anyway. So, no, I think they should have it be, use whatever you want. It's open, and then see what ends up happening. And I think what'll end up, will we see more deaths and stuff like that? I don't know. Maybe. They already pushed the envelope anyway. I don't think it'll change much.
Yeah,
what
I
do
agree.
You guys think?
No, I agree with you. I wonder if it would support itself. Like, I don't know if it would be able to be televised. Nobody give a shit about watching it. Like, it would be just like you see the bodybuilding. Like, most people listening right now don't know the tested bodybuilding federations. You know, you're familiar with the untested ones, IFBB and the other one that what Melissa did. Like, those are the two main ones, and everybody knows they're non-tested, so all the best of the best athletes go through there. All the cover models and magazines come from there. It's just there's very few people that come out of the natural world. So it's just because I think it's natural for us, or it's human nature for us to be drawn to these crazy extremes. And I think that I don't know if you could ever have a, you know, football team that is, you know, nobody is allowed steroids and we would watch it.
Just wait till gene therapy gets to the point where people can start fucking with that shit.
And CRISPR, yeah. We're just gonna now select certain genes and like foster these superhuman beings like you know, from the start. It's gonna be crazy.
Yeah, because I'll tell you something right now, all the anabolic steroids in the world.
It's not going to compete with that.
Can't even come close to genetics.
No.
I think we're all going to have like, you know, in like 2050, we'll have our own clone. So there'll be like a clone atom. Yeah. And then I could juice him up. I could do whatever.
Oh, yeah,
to him.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I could put him on the football field and make him blow up. Like I said, and he gets one life. He gets one life. That's it. But you have full control of it.
Don't think for a second those twins that it was in China, right? That were, come on, dude. Oh, as a side effect, their intelligence is
accident.
You know, whoops.
Yeah, we were trying to cure.
Oh, yeah. They can run like the fastest sprint time you've ever seen. Whoops. Yeah. That was weird that just happened.
Yeah, no, exactly.
You know, Speed, you just reminded me of something I was watching last night. So I've been watching this, and I'm not sure how I feel about this yet either. So there's a new YouTube channel. These guys are trying to get, they'll appreciate the shout out. So I think it's called Brute Strength, and they compare a power lifter, a bodybuilder.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, CrossFitter, and what am I missing? An Olympic lifter.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, so I totally think it draws me in because I'm interested to watch like some of the events like it and predict what I think should happen. And for the most part, it does fall in line. Now, what I think is stupid is taking a power lifter and running a 40-yard dash with them.
Did they do that?
Oh, yeah. And vertical jump. So they're doing these explode. And what I told Katrina while we were watching, I'm like, you know, this is going to be very interesting to see if this thing grows legs and they can actually do this, because this format is asking for a serious injury.
Like,
yeah, you take certain high level, because all these people are top.
They're going to compete like real hard.
Oh, they all are. They're very competitive. So I mean, come on, you take the top CrossFitter, the top power lifter, the top Olympic lifter. You take these top athletes that are hyper focused in a specific modality and at the one percentile of their class, and then you ask them to perform. Yeah. In a different modality and do things that are potentially explosive and you don't move explosively.
I can't believe I haven't seen a torn hamstring.
It's crazy. Like a bodybuilder doing Olympic lifts they've never even done before.
Yeah.
But of course, they don't want to, you know, they're strong, so they're going to want to put weight on there and try and move it really fast. Dude. And I'm just like cringing. Like,
I'm watching it. I can't, I mean,
well, it's smart.
It's, yeah, I'm entertained. Yeah, exactly. It, from an entertainment perspective, I think it's a smart angle. From as far as the reality of how long it will stick around because of the potential of someone getting injured. I mean, can you think of a higher potential injury? Because you think people think assume when you see, you know, four bodies like that, that they're all in like phenomenal shape. So they should be able to run and jump and do these things. But it's like, dude, when you take a girl that's a power lifter who's been doing slow grinding training forever, hasn't done any sprinting before, doesn't do any sort of...
And she has the muscle to generate a lot of force, but she doesn't have the control and the stability yes. to do the speed aspect of it.
Oh, they even had them doing side lateral drills, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, man, I'm like, dude, any minute now someone's going to tear an ACL.
And this
or
is just like getting them off of their... off the street in a sense where they're not prepping them with training ahead
of
time.
There's no prepping for this. There's no training for this. I'm watching the female ones right now, and I've seen the vertical jump. I've seen the 40-yard dash. I've seen it. Oh, then you also have this too. So you have, you know, a power lifter, an Olympic lifter going through a CrossFit workout. So what they've done is they take an event that would favor one of them. So mm-hmm. each one is, and it would heavily favor one. So obviously a CrossFitter, a CrossFit workout is her domain. She should destroy that. And then you have, I don't know the sport ones where, who they were trying, obviously the Olympic lifter is the one who was doing, you know, standing broad jump. She won, the 40-yard dash. She won. So the Olympic lifter won most of all the like field athletic performance things.
Mm-hmm.
She also won her Olympic lift. The CrossFitter is doing pretty well as far as what she's saying. But no, nothing bad has happened yet, but I can't help but think that it's coming.
Yeah.
Like if you're taking these people and you're having them compete at that high of a level in modalities that they're just not used to doing, you know?
Gosh, that's got to be interesting.
It's like a car crash. Yeah.
It is interesting to watch.
Have you been drinking the macadamia nut?
Doug got
milk.
Me.
Yeah. You're using it?
Yeah, Doug got me on.
Tell
it.
Me that's not the tits.
From the tits. The macadamia.
The 90s, right? The tits.
Tell me it's not amazing. I'm bringing it back, by the way.
Yeah. No.
Things that are good are the tits.
All right. Yeah. Are you
I'm bringing back
nerds. Are you using it in other things besides the smoothie box?
Because I'm doing the, Organifi Gold Juice with macadamia nut milk is heaven.
Oh, that's right. I saw you post it
on
your
spiritual.
You posted on your story the other day.
Oh,
have you frothed it up?
Yes.
Okay, you did.
So we got one of those.
You have a little frother.
Yeah.
Finally,
that's the business.
So what I do is I put the macadamia nut milk in like a little pot or whatever, and then so it starts to warm up. I put the a scoop of the gold juice, and then I do the little frother, and it makes a nice little frothy, amazing, creamy drink.
No.
Yeah.
And then I sleep like a baby.
One of my favorite.
Ooh. I sleep like a baby. Did you guys see what's going on with the school scandal, the college admissions scandal?
Okay, you guys were trying to tell me about this. Like, inform me, because I've heard this all over the news. This is a big scandal. Like, what's the deal?
Okay, so I'll read the first paragraph.
It's like cheating to get kids in,
bro,
right?
Bro, this is like, and this is
and
bad.
Bribing and shit.
This is bad. This is a great example of the elite, you know, cheating, using their money to cheat, and it's really going to it's going to be bad. The blowback is going to be terrible.
Yeah.
So federal officials have charged dozens of well-heeled parents, including actresses Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin, you know who they are, in a multi-million dollar scheme to cheat college admission standards. So basically what they did is they paid a consultant who then fabricated academic and athletic credentials and arranged bribes to get their kids into prestigious universities. How insane. How crazy. His clients, trip out, this is going to trip you out. His clients paid him, because I guess apparently he did a really good job. Like, he's like the best in the world to do this.
Yeah.
He got paid anywhere between $200,000 and $6.5 million for his service.
What?
So this guy was
making... Is that per kid?
That's what I'm reading, quote from the article.
What are these shit? All Ivy League schools? Like, what are these schools?
Oh, these are like the hardest to get into schools.
Yeah.
Princeton and Harvard and MIT. And so what he'll do is he'll fake like SAT scores.
Yeah.
He would literally stage photos of athletics. So he'd have them dress up in like, yeah.
Shut up.
And he would stage photos and videos to send to these colleges and be like, oh, he's a star athlete.
No wonder they got caught. I mean, how long can you pull that off?
Apparently, long enough.
Someone threw like a basketball at the kid that's supposed to be like an all-star. Like, hey, hits like, him in the face.
Olin Mills like picture. Just like,
wait a second.
I was here.
This doesn't make sense.
Dude, so this is crazy because it highlights two different things. It highlights just how difficult some of these colleges are to get into.
Yeah.
And then it also highlights the stuff that gets people pissed off at wealthy people. This is what makes it. This is why people get angry at wealthy people, is because they take shit like this and then they put everybody who's wealthy in this category. And look, I get it, man. This pisses me off too. It's like, if your kid can't get into a fucking school on their own merit,
yeah, that's a joke.
What are you really doing, by the way? If you're a celebrity parent, and first off, you already have a challenge.
Well,
anyway.
You're feeding right into what you know, which is, you know, it's more important to who you know than what you know, right?
Well, dude,
so you're connecting your kid to all these other.
How are you setting your kid up for any kind of success in life? You know what I'm saying? Like, first of all, if you're a celebrity to begin with, if you're a successful person to begin with, and you have kids, you run the challenge of raising a child who doesn't know how to overcome adversity, who doesn't know how to work for themselves because they're the son or daughter of, you know, CEO, whatever, or actress or whatever. So that's already a challenge enough because you're going to raise it. Otherwise, your kid's going to be a little shitty celebrity kid who fucking has no value in life and is just a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And could grow up depressed and whatever.
Named after a fruit.
Yeah. So you're going to, exactly, apple or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're going to raise this kid cucumber already with that challenge. And all you're going to do is feed into it by being like, we'll get you into Princeton. I'm going to fucking pay for this fake shit. And you're going to be involved in it because a lot of these kids were in the pictures and stuff that they had to fake. Terrible parents.
Wow.
This is why Paris Hilton exists.
And it's really, this is big, right? From what I hear, it's supposed to be like, there's a lot of people that are getting indicted and stuff.
Oh,
right?
Dude, more than
real people that earned it are getting snuffed.
50 people have been charged. More than 36 people in multiple states were already taken into custody. And they're calling this operation Operation Varsity Blues.
No way. Oh, yes, that's dude. Perfect.
That is fucked up.
So they're getting like federal, sentences, right? They're like prison time for this
is a big deal, not to mention
because there's multiple charges here.
Oh dude,
I read somewhere it's like fraud and there's lots
you're
of
breaking all kinds
bribery
of law.
Yeah, there's so many laws being broken here.
Oh dude, and there's already a backlash against celebrities that's kind of growing anyway, so this is just gonna feed
this is all part of the Hollywood takedown.
Isn't that crazy,
dude?
How that's been happening ever since Trump. It's been like this,
we talked
Hollywood
about this, like,
destruction.
We talked about this almost 2 years ago, dude. This is Netflix.
Yeah. he thinks Netflix still.
Netflix is trying to take Hollywood down.
Get rid of all.
Yeah, dude. I'm hilarious. Telling you, Netflix and Hulu are partnering up on this shit, dude.
Oh, my God.
Pumping money.
Something.
All right, so I got one more article I want to cover just because I've gotten this has been sent to me now at least 50 times. So title of the article, 3 or more eggs a day increase your risk of heart disease and early death, says a new study.
Huh?
Yeah, that's right.
What is going on? Is this another one of those what the health kind of like misinformation things?
This is
floating
bullshit
around.
So researchers examined data from 6 U.S. study groups of more than 29,000 people, and they followed them for 17 and a half years on average. And over the follow-up period, they found that consuming whole eggs or lots of cholesterol, 300 milligrams of cholesterol, for example, per day, was associated with a 3%. It's not a 3%.
Wait a second. 29,000 people over the course of 17 years, you were able to tease out all the things necessary to tease out to come up to this conclusion?
We're going
to
get into
this.
Get
the fuck out of here with that.
I'm a little skeptical.
I don't even need to hear anymore to know that it's bullshit.
Well, a little skeptical.
Well, they do try to control for things and that, but let's talk about this. So they found that 300 milligrams of cholesterol per day was associated with a 3% higher risk of heart disease and a 4% higher risk of early death. Now, that alone is a very small percentage. That's almost nothing. Each additional half an egg consumed per day was associated with an additional 1% higher risk of cardiovascular disease. Now, here's the problem. The problem is that these studies did not take into account that there are other unhealthy behaviors like low physical activity and an unhealthy diet. Now, here's my case, and here's why I know this is complete bullshit. Okay, for the last 20 years, because this was done over the last 20, 30 years, whole egg consumption has been demonized. Mm-hmm. We've been told and taught for a long time that you do not eat the yolk of an egg because cholesterol is bad for you. So in that 30-year period, who are the people most likely to ignore that advice? People who don't really care about health. So these same people are far less likely to exercise
right.
and far more likely to eat shitty food. It's the same association we see when we look at vegans versus the average eater. And
that's
we
what
find
I'm saying. What are they? Does this same these same people were they not allowed to go have Taco Bell freaking three times a day? Were they not allowed to eat a tub of ice cream every single night?
No.
Were they not allowed to eat a fucking pound
of
bacon?
Exercising?
No. Yeah. For the last 30 years, the people most likely to eat lots of whole eggs were also people who disregarded health because. If you regarded health for the last 30 years, if health was a priority of yours...
You were on the egg white kick.
Yes, because that was part of the information that you got. Right. So that's what's happening. If they eliminate all that and you look at healthy people who eat whole eggs, you will find that whole egg consumption is associated with better health. Cholesterol is associated with more strength, better brain health, better lipid... everything. It's associated with a very small... There's a very small percentage of people, very, very small... who do need to watch cholesterol consumption. But if you're one of those people, you know.
The same
is
people
this gaining traction, this article?
It's getting shared, especially to me, because I'm the one that makes the case for all of this. But no, it's a bullshit study. I would take it with a grain of salt. That's my
stupid
beef with it.
Yeah, and I'd scramble it.
This quaz brought to you by Organifi. For those days you fall short on getting your organic veggies or whole food nutrition, Organifi fills the gap with laboratory tested certified organic superfoods to help give your health and performance the added edge. Try Organifi totally risk free for 60 days by going to Organifi.com. That's Organifi. And use a coupon code MINDPUMP for 20% off at checkout.
All right, our first question is from M. Mank. Can you review training for strength versus hypertrophy? What are the benefits and drawbacks of each? Which to do when and for what results? Should you alternate between the two?
Good question.
It is. I think before we get into it, it's important to understand that training for strength and training for hypertrophy a lot of crossover.
Yeah.
It's not
black
super
or white.
Yeah, it's not super clear division like training for flexibility and training for strength or something like that.
Now that being said, I think for explaining this so the average person gets this, I think it's important that we do draw a line though. So I would like to create like a visual for somebody. I mean, if you most bodybuilders tend to gravitate towards hypertrophy training.
It's muscle growth, bigger muscles.
Right. What does that mean, though, in a more simpler form? That means the way they're training is they're doing a lot of high repetition exercise. They're doing a lot of 10 to 15 reps. They're supersetting a lot of things, so they're getting a lot of the pump.
Yeah, blood pumping.
Right, which will actually train the body. It's in a different adaptation, right? So you get a different adaptation. Now, what Sal was saying is there's carryover from hypertrophy training to strength and vice versa. But there is a clear distinction of what somebody kind of starts to look like if they stay in one versus the other.
Sure. And in our space, strength and hypertrophy mean, like, hypertrophy means building bigger muscles and strength means lifting heavy weights for low repetitions. But the reality is if you train 10 to 15 reps, you're going to get stronger, right? You're going to be stronger overall. And if you train in the 2 to 5 rep range, which is just for that kind of low rep strength, you're going to get bigger too.
Well, and plus sustaining that strength for a little bit longer, you know, you see some benefit there for the hypertrophy.
Right. Now, back in the day, bodybuilders used to incorporate strength phases quite often. I know Arnold and Franco in particular used to do cycles of powerlifting. And the things that they said that it brought them was a very dense, hard look and feel to their muscles. Now, if you look at old pictures of Franco Colombo, you can see this in particular in his chest and his back. I mean, here was a guy that was, I believe when he competed, under 200 pounds. He was a little bodybuilder, but he could deadlift 700 pounds and bench press over 500 pounds, which was astronomical weight for anybody.
He was lifting up cars.
Yeah, I mean, just
crazy shit.
And he had this very dense look to his body. Hypertrophy training, staying in that phase, you know, tends to create more of the bigger bubble look to the body, but you lose some of that density. But here's the other thing too. Stay in one or the other always, and you actually don't get as great a results as if you move back and forth a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like if your goal is to just be strong in that low rep range, type of strength, every once in a while throwing in a hypertrophy phase will make you stronger in the low rep phases and vice versa. If you always stay in the hypertrophy phase, I remember when Adam did this when we first started the podcast, he went through this. This was why you were competing as a professional physique competitor. You went through a whole strength phase, and I want you to you need to find the picture of your back, that before and after of your back. And this was after already, you know, 15 years of training. You look like you gained all the pounds of muscle you gained through that strength phase went to your back.
Oh, I think it's why I feel so passionate about it, and I noticed that this is very common in that space. It's rare that I would meet somebody that was a bodybuilder that also would run strength cycles. It just, you would never see it. Not like real strength cycles. You would see some bodybuilders like, oh yeah, I know it's important to do some low reps every once in a while. So within a workout, they do like a set of heavy, and then they count that as their like strength training. And right. It's not that doesn't mean it's not strength training. It just means they're not running like a full strength cycle where they're changing the focus and adaptation that they're going after for a 3 to 4 week period. And, you know, it wasn't until I got competing did I become more methodical about my training approach. For years, I was always the guy who just kind of threw everything in the kitchen sink at workouts and changed it every single time. And I never had to show day over day and week over week and month over month improvements until I got into competing. And so one of the things I loved about competing is it really drew that out of me of really having to apply all the science and information that I had gathered and learned over all these years. And I knew, I've always known that it's important that I strength train. I just didn't, because I gravitated towards the things that I enjoyed and liked more. When I started to do that and I started lifting for the first time in my life, singles, doubles, triples, training like that, oh, especially in my back exploded. And I've shared this, so I'm sure some people are tired of hearing it on the podcast. I've probably said it 3 times, I think. But the biggest thing that was a game changer that I knew is like seated row was like the staple beginning of almost every workout many, many times for me. I went through cycles where I was pull-ups was for a while, but the seated row, just, you know, getting myself to retract my shoulders. I loved wrapping it up and then doing the whole stack or get as much weight as I could do on there. And I remember doing that for years and got really good at it. And so I watched my weight go up for a really long time. And then I completely went off of the hypertrophy training, switched over to a strength training cycle where I was doing a lot of these heavy compound lifting, right? Deadlifting, bent over rows, really heavy, and dropping down to the 3 to 5 rep range. And I wanted to focus so much on that I kind of eliminated all the other exercises and things that I was doing. I was just going to do heavy deadlifting, heavy bent over row or T-bar row, and like weighted pull-ups, like, and I just got rid of all the machine shit and all the little bullshit that I had been doing for years. And I remember when I went back, so not only did you see the visual change like you're talking about, Sal, but the strength difference in my back was insane. I hadn't touched a seated row in like a year. I grab a hold of that thing and rode more weight than I ever had in my life after 15 years of trying to do that.
I was going to say, inversely to, you know, what you're bringing up in terms of like gaining strength, and that including that and what that did as far as benefiting you personally. I remember, you know, Robert Overs talking about just including bicep curls and, you know, not necessarily that like hypertrophy versus strength, but also like what hypertrophy allows you to do is really focus a little bit more on single joint movements and really compartmentalize where there may be deficiencies and where there may be little interruptions in the chain. So now I can build that up so it builds strength into the overall. And, you know, hypertrophy lends itself greater towards a single joint type a work in terms of like, if I'm going to just do like 1 to 3 reps of like a bicep curl,
that's doesn't kind work of, well.
Yeah, it's not as conducive to, you know, for training for that.
No. And I think one of the biggest things that, cause okay, we could talk about like heavy strength training being low reps and the hypertrophy being a little higher reps and, you know, heavy strength training being more of the straight sets with the longer rest periods and the hypertrophy being shorter, you know, rest periods, sometimes supersets aiming for a pump. But really the biggest thing that characterizes strength versus hypertrophy type training is this right here. Heavy strength training places an emphasis and focus on movement. Hypertrophy training places a heavy emphasis on muscle. Mm-hmm. So when you're training for hypertrophy and you're doing a bench press, I'm trying to feel my pecs. I'm trying to get a pump in my pecs. I'm trying to feel them work. When I'm training for strength, I'm trying to get good at the bench press.
You're trying to move weight.
I'm trying to move more weight. And strength, a very, very large part of strength is technique and skill, is the skill of the lift. So what you'll find with strength training is doing a lot of a few exercises. what you'll find with hypertrophy training is doing a little bit, but a lot of different exercises. So I may do three sets, but I may do five different exercises for hypertrophy versus strength, where I'm doing seven sets of three exercises, because the goal of strength is to get stronger with a specific skill.
You're reinforcing that pattern.
So I'm practicing the squat. I'm practicing the squat. I'm getting good at the squat. And they both give you different benefits, but they're both complementary. That's the important thing about this conversation right here, is that it's extremely complementary. Now, if you're a strength athlete, you should definitely live most of the time in strength, and you should live most of the time in the movement. And if you're a bodybuilder, you should definitely live most of the time in hypertrophy. But both, even those extreme, you know, aspects, or those extreme athletes, should live a little bit in the other world, because they complement. Now, if you're just the average lifter who wants to get jacked and wants to feel good and, you know, have longevity, do both. Definitely do both. Cycle through them. In fact, I would say you would probably benefit by doing, the average person will probably benefit by doing a 1-to-3 ratio of strength to hypertrophy. I would say 2/3 of the time hypertrophy, 1/3 of the time strength. If you're a beginner, I would focus mostly on movement, maybe not heavy weight, but just movement to practice the movement. So kind of in that space. And then later on, focus on feeling the muscles. But
well, all of our programs are written from this philosophy.
That's right. That's
you
right.
Know, every one of our programs, if you unpack the structure of it or how we built it, they're broken up in these as shortest. I think the shortest phase we have is 2 weeks in one of our programs. The longest phase, I believe, is 4 weeks that we have in one of our programs. And what are phases are these like mesocycles of specific adaptations that we're going after. So, for example, you'll do strength training and MAPS anabolic first, and then you move into hypertrophy. So the idea is that you use both these tools. For almost everybody, it's very rare that I would ever tell somebody that you shouldn't use both. I mean, even if you're in a sport-specific like bodybuilding or sport-specific strength training, you still should use the other one. That's the only time where I would think it would be just be skewed, like you're saying, Sal. Everybody else should have a very nice even amount of balance of strength training and hypertrophy training, with sprinkled in some endurance and flexibility. Like all these adaptations are extremely important, and they all complement and feed the overall goal of performance, the overall goal of changing your physique, the overall goal of fat loss, the overall goal of building muscle. All of them contribute to that. And so I think why I like this question is it's one of the most neglected thing I see in gyms is people getting stuck in a modality or stuck in a single-minded focus, not realizing that just because they have a very specific goal doesn't mean that their programming and their training should stay that specific all the time, because as time goes on, the results start to diminish, and it starts to really drop off hard after about 4 or 5 weeks. Like, you know, so, and every, there's going to be like individual variants, like what people can get good results still after 4 or 5 weeks. But what ends up happening is after about 4 to 6 weeks, our bodies get really adapted to no matter what it is you're throwing at it. And then the change that most people are chasing in their body starts to really slow down and diminish. And so if you've been doing anything longer than a month or two of the same type of training, whether it be hypertrophy or strength, one of the best things you could possibly do is to switch to the other.
One of my favorite things to do would be to take somebody who only trains bodybuilding style hypertrophy. And this was more common with women, where they would do the higher rep stuff. And I'd put them through a strength cycle.
Totally.
And blow their minds.
Yeah.
And they would build more muscle than they ever had before. And they'd be like, whoa, I didn't know I could build.
They get a radical change.
Oh, it used to absolutely trip them out. So yeah, you got to mix things up. Here's the thing too. It's fun. It's fun to train.
Right.
I have a blast training in strength because it's a different focus, and I'm moving heavy weight, and I'm getting used to the skill of the lift. And then I have a blast doing the hypertrophy stuff and getting a big pump and looking in the mirror and seeing how I can sculpt and shape my body. They're both really fun, and they make, if you're gonna work out long term, and you want to do this for a very long time, it's a good idea to try and have fun with it. And it can be very fun to change the focus of your training.
I want to share one more thing that I and I'm completely speculating on this, and you kind of touched on it a little bit, which is this lifting heavy weights give you this kind of harder granite look, and we don't quite have the science to explain exactly what this is. But personally, for myself, this was one of the most
beneficial things for a guy who's been driven by his aesthetics and building muscle and the way I look for so long in my career. When I finally ran like these pure strength cycles, I had built muscle that looked different on my body. And what I noticed as a guy who had been in the hypertrophy type of supersetting, lots of reps, chasing the pump mentality, was I looked awesome when I was in the gym and I was aired up. I looked great. Like, I mean, I remember I used to say to myself all the time, and my buddy was the same way, we look at each other and be like, man, if I could just look like this all the time, I don't need to be bigger than this. I want to look the way I look when I'm all aired up and I'm pumped up. But then as soon as I would walk out, and I'm sure part of this is skewed because I'm a 6'3" tall, big guy with long muscle bellies, I become half the man. I would deflate all the way down to almost look like a guy who kind of or didn't really work out very much, but then in the gym, I look like a monster. And it wasn't until I got into strength training that I have this more muscular look. It completely flat and deflated. That was what tripped me out. Was
I think it's actual muscle fiber. That's what I think it is. It's less of the sarcoplasmic, you know, hypertrophy,
right,
and more of the actual fiber, which is why it comes across so hard.
I think that's what we attribute to. I can't prove any of this.
It's like Ben Pollock. Look at his physique. Isn't he doing body or physique or something right now?
Right, right.
Look at his body. It looks like it's made out of stone.
Yeah.
You know, and he's a power lifter.
Yeah. It even looked like I had more muscle. Like, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I would deflate out. And then when I started strength training, it gave me this new look that I had never seen on my physique. And that was, and again, this is anecdotal. This is with myself. But there's been many people that I've seen this happen to, too, and I just can't quite put my finger on it and explain it.
Next question is from Kudajar. Why do I suffer from low back pain while playing sports like basketball and flag football? What are some things I can do to prevent it?
Oh, dude, this is me.
Yeah, it's now, of course, there's going to be a lot of individual variants here. We don't see you. I can't see you moving. I don't know what your specific issue is.
Yeah, your biomechanics.
So I'm going to speak to the general. And in my experience, generally speaking, this person just has poor core recruitment patterns and stability. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the core of your body, that represents kind of the mid section of your body, but I would also include the hips in that as well. And what's going on is you have this symphony of muscles that communicate and work together to perform these athletic pursuits that you're trying to pursue. And this involves the hip flexors, the glutes, the abdominals, the obliques, the internal obliques, the TVA muscles, even the lats stabilize the core to some extent.
Stabilizing, but also allowing rotation with strength and then not allowing rotation simultaneously. It's a pretty complex system and operations that the core is controlling.
Yeah. Now, in my experience, people like this were like, man, my low back gets so tired and starts to hurt when I'm trying to run a lot. Because that's what's happening here with basketball and flag football, is they're running a lot. It's typically an over-reliance on hip flexor stabilizing the core and less of a reliance on the other muscles of the core that can stabilize. Now, when you look at some of these hip flexor muscles actually attach at the lower spine. So if you look at an anatomy chart, you can see, like, for example, the psoas attaches along the lower part of the spine, goes kind of through the body, and then attaches to the front of your femur. Now, when that muscle is doing too much work, it's going to get inflamed and tight and fatigued, just like any muscle would. And oftentimes when muscles get tight and inflamed, where you're going to feel the pain is at one of the points of insertion. And it's usually, in this case, where it inserts at the low back. And so you're going to feel this kind of low, but it's not your low back that's weak. It's not your spine. It's that your hip flexors are just fucking doing too much work.
Well, and your low back is taking a lot of the load and stress the entire time. I would venture to say that you have the identical thing. And then again, like the boys said when we first started this answering this, is there's going to be individual variants. We could be completely wrong on who this person is. But in my experience, this person is the person that has that anterior pelvic tilt.
And where the butt sticks out.
Yeah, your butt sticks out. I have this. This was a major issue for me my whole life. And Sal went into depth right there talking about all the hip flexor muscles that could be tight and pulling on it in a weak core. And all those things are a result of this, or vice versa, right? But if you lay down, and this is how I would show somebody or test that with somebody, is I would lay down on my back, bend your knees at 45 degrees, just like if you're going to do a sit-up or a crunch, and pay attention to how big of a gap you have in your low back. So can you fit your fingers or your hand, or can you actually stick your arm underneath your low back. And I can actually get like about halfway through my forearm because I have such an excessive arch in my low back. And that's something like back presses is, and we've done stuff like this on the YouTube. So there's quite a few videos. The hip flexor deactivation Sal's done, which is a great video. I did some back press videos on there. There's quite a few things on
vacuum poses.
Yeah, vacuum poses. There's a lot of things on the Mind Pump TV from YouTube channel that are great for this. But I would be almost certain that you're somebody who does is just and getting pelvic control too. So there's specific exercises that really helped me. So once I addressed my core, released the hip flexors, got myself back into more of a neutral spinal alignment, so I don't have that excessive arch or that lower what they call lower cross syndrome. And then I started doing things like Bulgarian split squats to where you are getting you're strengthening in that bottom position. Did wonders for me. And I'm completely pain-free in my low back. I had it all through high school as a kid, playing sports all the way into almost my 30s as an adult, and it wasn't until later on that I addressed this.
Yeah, your back pain went away as you got older.
Yeah, I couldn't even... Isn't funny about that?
Yeah.
I couldn't even squat. This is also, and this probably this kid or young man, I don't know who it is, is also probably their low back bothers them when they squat, especially if they try and deep squat. And that was what was wrong with me. And my arch was so excessive that when I was squatting, I was getting so much flexion and extension in my lower back that after like 10 reps of squatting, my low back would just be on fire. So, and I can say at 37 years old, I have zero back pain now. I feel incredible. I now can sit at the bottom of a squat with 200-300 pounds on my back, no problem, and feel incredible. But it took me a lot of time addressing
it's also,
this.
We also got to mention this because here's what happens sometimes. People were like, okay, cool. I heard that my core is weak, so I need to strengthen my core. And so they'll go to the gym and they'll do a bunch of leg raises.
Right, and they'll reinforce their hip flexor issue.
Yeah, sit-ups and all these exercises. No. It's not that your core is necessarily weak. It's that you have a recruitment pattern that is emphasizing the use of your hip flexors, and that's what's getting that's
you wrote
what the problem
a,
is.
You wrote a great guide on this. Mm-hmm. We have a free guide, mindpumpfree.com. You can get a free low back pain guide.
Oh, right.
You that's address all you address all this in
that's,
there.
Grab that because I talk a lot about it. But
yeah, it's
you know,
free.
And here's the thing. You want to be able to get your core to work in an optimal way, and so a lot of the exercises you're going to do are going to be correctional. Once you get the movement patterns that you want, then you can work on the strengthening and strength aspect. Another great exercise is a plank, but a plank done with a posterior pelvic tilt where you're tucking your tailbone and you're holding that position. That's another good one to help people kind of get those hip flexors to chill out a little bit.
Also a good one that you did on Mind Pump TV. So that's one of our top videos you can find on there.
Next question is from Haley Littlejohn 210. Do you have any advice on how to overcome a negative body image while bulking? I'm having a hard time watching myself gain body fat, even though I know I need to eat in a surplus to gain muscle.
This is funny because it's hilarious. Guys will have a problem cutting because they get the negative body image, and that was me. Like, I didn't like to cut because I don't like to see myself get smaller. And then you have a lot of female, I would have a lot of female clients who didn't want to eat in a surplus because they just don't want to see themselves get bigger. The best way, okay, what you focus on is what you see, okay? So if you focus on your size while you're bulking, you might have a tough time bulking. Take your focus off your size and instead focus on your strength.
Yeah.
So instead of looking at how big your body's getting or muscle, how much muscle you're gaining, because that's always going to remind you that you're maybe gaining weight, focus on how strong you are in the gym and how much stronger you can get in the gym. And that'll work wonders. And what would happen, what I used to do when I was trying to cut is rather than focusing on my strength, which is what I really hated, which is seeing my strength decline as I'm in a deficit, is I'd make sure to work out in tank tops and notice definition. So I could see, oh, I see some definition there in my shoulder or whatever. And I'd focus on the things that are going to show up in one of these states that'll help you with
this that. This is a old bodybuilder strategy. If you've ever wondered why you always see the big buff bodybuilder guys with the big hoodies and sweaters on and working out in the middle of the summer, I used to do this too. Just like Sal is saying, when I'm on the bulk and I know I'm putting body fat on and I know what my body looks like when it's 3%, looks awesome, and you can't walk 10 yards without somebody complimenting your physique, and then all of a sudden you go to this puffy looking guy that is looks like I'm getting fat. And so I totally can relate to this and understand. And that's one of the things we used to do is like, it's you know the process you have to go through. I know that I'm putting weight on. I know that I'm going to put some body fat on. I can't
get, I can't identify with the 3% guy. So I'm just going to cover him up. I'm going to cover him up in a hoodie and a sweater. And all I'm thinking about is the weights. Like, so all I'm looking at is that deadlift getting, I'm getting stronger. I'm getting stronger. And the way I feel my workout, and I'm in a sweater and a hoodie covered up because I'm not focused on my body. It's not about my body right now. It's about building a metabolism up, right? Cause that's when I'm on a bulk, between shows, it's all about how much muscle can I build to not only speed my metabolism up, but then also to make my physique look better before I come back down. I know that while I'm on that mission, that it's inevitable that body fat's going to come on and I'm not going to look like I look like on stage. So I'm not even going to pay attention to it. I don't care. I'm going to do the things that I need to do, which is eat the way I need to eat, train the way I need to. And those are the things that I'm focusing on during that process. And you're just going through that process.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's funny. It's like you get a car and you want to make your car look just cherry, right? You want it to look beautiful. And so what do you do first? You put some primer on it. Well, that's stage one. Like, don't worry about how your car looks right now. It's got primer on. You know what the next stages are going to make your car look like. Like, this is just part of the process. That's all it is. You're not going to finish here. So if you're somebody that likes to maintain a leaner body weight, but you want to speed up your metabolism, put on a little muscle, like, don't worry about the bulking period, because that's just a stage to get you to where you want to go to make it easier to maintain what you like to maintain.
You're in control.
That's all it is.
You're in control.
That's right. That's all it is. And here's the other thing you do. Start to embrace it a little bit. You know, I had female clients who, when they would start to get over this, like, oh my God, I'm gaining a little bit of weight. You know, I'm building a little bit. Then they'd come to me and be like, you know what? I kind of like my curves a little bit. I think I like the way I look in a dress. And I think I like, and they would start to embrace it. And that's great. It's so awesome to be able to love your body in different states of good health, because you can have great health and be heavier, and you can have great health and be lighter. You know, when you look at studies of people and their health, there's a pretty wide range of body fat percentages where people can be healthy. You know, like for a man, like between 10% and 18%, you're not going to really, as long as they're healthy, yeah, you're not going to have that big of a difference, if any at all.
You're naturally going to fluctuate. And it's just like the sooner you are comfortable with that fact, the better. And so this is one of those things that's like you can just know that you can just roll with it and find the benefits, like you're saying, to it. That would be ideal. But I know that this, or just go on the perma bulk like me.
Yeah.
Next question is from Misfit Nerdy. What are the biggest pitfalls of a reverse diet, and how can you best avoid them?
Oh, man. Biggest challenge of a reverse diet, in my opinion, is going up too fast.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, it's time to reverse diet. I'm going to add 500 calories to my maintenance.
I don't think you can go too slow.
Yes.
I don't think anybody goes slow enough. I think we're all flirting with the other side, including myself, because you're in a race and a hurry to get back to them. Plus, you enjoy the fact you're eating more calories. But the reality of it is if you're about to go on a reverse diet, that means you're coming out of a diet that you've probably been in for a while to cut, and a low calorie diet. So, if you came from that, you know, introducing a little bit more calories every single day or every week, you just have one day where you just, I mean, no matter what, that's heading in the right direction of reverse dieting. If you're dieting low cal every single day for weeks on and weeks out, you have your first week where you have a calorie surplus in one day. That's already heading in a better direction on the reverse diet, especially when it's structured right. Very few people do it like that. Most people, every day, they're already starting to add more calories. And so, therefore, I typically say less is more in this situation when we're reversing out, because your body is going to respond really quick to them additional calories. And it's really easy to get caught up and like how amazing the workout feels, how amazing the pump is. And then you start justifying in your head like, oh, more calories. Yeah. Oh, more calories.
Especially as your metabolism starts to ramp up. It's because you're combining it. Hopefully you're combining this with resistance training. Reverse dieting without lifting weights is just getting fatter. Mm-hmm. But if you're lifting weights with it and you're reverse dieting, as your metabolism kicks up, your appetite starts to go up. And this kind of fucks people up a little bit, because they'll be like, oh, now I'm really hungry. I think I need to eat more. I typically will bump people, I would say, 100 calories once every 3 weeks or so, right around there. And so that's slow.
Per day, right?
Yeah, like they'll go 100 calories more on average per day for 3 weeks. And then the next 3 weeks, if we reassess, and then we'll add another 100 calories. So that's not much at all. It's a very, very slow process. We're just trying to build muscle. We're just trying to get the metabolism speed up. We'll monitor body weight and expect some weight gain. But if the weight gain comes on too fast, then we'll start to back out of it a little bit. But it is a bit of a slow process. It's not something that's fast. And I would say that's probably the biggest challenge.
I also think that to that point, though, that when we talk about the biggest pitfall of people like really overdoing it, I think that there's also the side too that where people, I get a lot of DMs around this, and I think we overcomplicate it too, where we're trying to be precise. Like, I'm not going to be able to give you a precise number. There's such an individual variance between every single person that range could be as low as like 25 more calories a day to as high as 300 to 500 maybe a day, depending. And because there's so many factors besides the person, the metabolism, the programming, the amount of muscle you already currently have, where your the ratio, what is 500 calories to somebody who's eating 5,000 calories is not a big deal.
Sure.
500 calories to somebody who's eating 1,500 calories is 1/3 of their fucking day. So there's so many factors. It's like, I think the biggest pitfall I see is people just going off the rails and just saying, fuck it. Like, if you're already paying attention and trying to be, you know, make a conscious effort to slowly increase yourself, you're probably doing a good job. That's not and I don't see like somebody going, oh shit, you misjudged that by 50 calories a day. You should have been 50 calories less. Like, that's not what I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. I see people going off the fucking rails is what I see. And so if you're somebody,
it's not even a diet. It's just,
yeah, exactly. It's not even a diet. They're calling it a reverse diet, but it's a bunch of bullshit. It's, I'm no longer cutting to lose weight. Now I'm quote unquote, it's matter of fact, it's turning into a new buzzword.
It is.
I just came off of a cutting diet. Now I'm in a reverse diet, which people have no fucking clue what that means.
And I'm eating backwards.
Right.
I poop out my mouth.
Yeah.
If you go too fast, too hard, or if you just binge after a diet, which is what happens to a lot of competitors, you run the risk of not just gaining a lot of body fat, but actually adding fat cells to your body. There's studies that now show that the body tries to adapt by being able to have a higher capacity to capture energy because it was fed such low calories for so long, and now you're stuffing your face because you're just going off the rails. Your body doesn't have enough fat cells to capture all this energy, so it actually adds fat cells. And guess what? It's hard to get rid of those fat cells once you add them on. This is why we see competitors who do the crazy diet binge, diet binge, diet binge over and over again. Each time they do it, it's harder and harder for them to get into shape. And you'll hear terms like, oh, you know, I can't get as sharp as I used to. Or, oh, my lines don't look as good as they used to. Maybe it's the age. Maybe it's the steroids. No, it's because you gain 30 pounds in 3 weeks post-show every single time you do a show, and you're doing 2 or 3 shows a year. You're just adding fat cells to your body. You're just making it much, much more difficult.
I also do things like to simplify this process because, again, I think some people they overcomplicate this. Is if I have a client who's following a diet and then we're now transitioning over into reverse, I actually don't change the diet that much. It looks almost exactly the same, but then I'll do something like this. I'll say, okay, you know how we were just having all chicken breasts right here? I want you to switch everything to either chicken thighs or red meat right here. Or, you know, this meal right here where I always have you have this, I want you to add a half avocado to this. And so it's really the reverse diet doesn't look that much different than the diet that got them to the point where they're at, hopefully to achieve their goal or whatever.
So it's not this radical change.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, I'm keeping them because they've already been on a great structure, right? They've proven they've got down to this, whether it be for show reasons or just to get to their goal. And they've been in this cut for a while. Now it's time to reverse out. And so I'm going to have them follow exactly what I had them to get them down to the whatever point it was. And I'm just going to make little subtle adds to that. That has been the best strategy for me when it comes to keeping somebody to adhere to the diet versus, you know, getting into this like debate of like, well, I think you should only give people about 100 calories. Oh, I think you should give 50. The difference between 50 and even 500 calories a day isn't that huge when you think about someone actually adding in fat. Where it's crazy is the people that go off the rails. So instead of getting so hyper-focused on, you know, arguing over 50 to 75 calories, find things in their life that they've already created a behavior, right? They've already been eating a certain way. So instead of radically changing that, just as a trainer or coach, like I know she is, you know, add avocado or add some healthy foods with more calories into their regimen and just do it slowly.
Well, the slowly that actually talks to pretty much anything. Like if you're coming out of a keto diet, slowly add carbs, you know, back into your diet.
Right. That's a great example, yeah, right? I wouldn't change the keto diet that much.
No,
I
want to come out of keto. Okay. I'm going to eat 300 grams of carbs today. No, that's the wrong thing to do. You're going to make yourself sick. It's not going to work. Instead, add 50 grams of carbs a week or every other week and see how that feels. You know, oh, I'm coming out of a fast. I just fasted for 48 hours. I can't wait to eat a major meal. No, you haven't eaten for 48 hours. Eat something small and take your time. I know, Justin, when you did the carnivore diet, how did you come out of that? How was that process?
So I think a while back before that, when we had that 48-hour fast, or it was 72-hour fast. So I made the mistake of like eating just a bit too much. And I remember talking about that and like what kind of damage that did in terms of like just being on, you know, the toilet and like suffering. But yeah, so this time I exactly what you're saying, like very, very subtly started to introduce carbs, especially, into the diet. And that was in the form of, you know, fruit for pretty much the first part of it, or rice, like real small amounts of rice, like 50 grams or so, like where I would just like start to, you know, incorporate that throughout the week. And then maybe around like week two, week three, I started to get back to normal.
So I'm glad you brought up the coming out of the keto thing, because I've been getting a ton of DMs. I know that isn't this question, but it does follow the same kind of principles. And this way I can just refer to this episode and I don't have to write this out long form to everybody. This is what I've been telling people that heard that keto episode and are now like, oh, I think I should transition out of keto. How do I do that? So just like this point, don't switch your keto diet way up. Follow exactly like it. Now, the only thing I have this person do now is say, okay, if you're working out, which you should be, you're training, and whenever you go to your training, I want you to start with like 50 grams of carbohydrates, preferably from things like sweet potato, white rice, fruit. And target 25 to 50 grams and split it in half before and post workout. So somewhere between an hour to 2 hours before you go to your lift, mm-hmm. add 25 grams of carbohydrates into the diet. Post workout, add 25 grams, and that's all. And then stick to the keto diet the rest of the day, and then do that for a week or two. See how you feel, and then slowly increase that number from 25 to now 50 pre and post. Now you're starting to eat 100 grams. Then the next place I go is I go to breakfast. So then now start to introduce 25 to 50 grams of carbohydrates into your breakfast. So that's kind of the process, give or take, right? We're throwing round numbers out there right now that are generic, but that I would tell somebody to come out of a keto diet. Don't just stop being keto. Be almost all keto. Follow exactly the plan you were following last week. Oh, and this is the same thing applies to the reverse diet. Just add a little bit of carbohydrates pre and post workout. I think that is one of the best ways you can do it.
Excellent. And with that, go to mindpumpfree.com and download our guides for free. We've got a lot of fitness and nutrition guides on there, and they cost nothing. You can also find all of us on Instagram. So you can find Justin at mindpumpjustin.
I'm on the gram.
You can find Adam at mindpumpadam, and you can find me at Mind Pump Sal.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.